Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're walking through the actual events that took place in Yosha's life so that Christians that celebrate Christmas and Easter might know the truth. Is it possible that God died?
No, or he wouldn't be God. I think that's pointed out in Chabawook when he's talking about the delusion. This guy Paul will pull. He says, "What is this? You can't die."
You are forever. You are eternal. So the very basis of Christianity, which is that God died for their sins. God can't die. So that's obviously not true. Now, in pagan religions, Dionysus dies every year. Tammuz died every year. Bacchus died every year. Osiris dies every year. That's standard pagan fare of a god that dies for some benefit of humanity. But the real God can't die. Would you want to trust your eternity to a God that man can kill?
Not at all. I don't want to trust my eternal being on anything other than Yah's words. You know.
So why do you think Yosha said, my God, why have you, and the Hebrew word in the psalm is azab, which means to separate from. Why have you separated from me? Is it perhaps that God can't die so that the body of the sacrificial lamb can fulfill Passover by sacrificing?
I think he's got it. Yes. Yeah. By George, I think he's got it.
Yeah, pretty straightforward, pretty simple, clear, consistent with who Yahweh is, consistent with what Passover is all about. Now, I would tell you, a human dies, let's just say you're out there and somebody gets run over by a Mack truck and they are diddly eye dead. Is their soul still conscious and alive?
No.
No. And yet, what happened with Yosha's soul after the body succumbed on Passover?
His soul went to Sheol to perfect us. He even mentions later, you know, what it's about. It's about getting rid of patriotism and militarism and religion and politics and all these things. And just
the very things that were left behind in Egypt when Matzah was celebrated. So from a classical definition of death, which is the breath of life, the soul, is gone. Yosha didn't even meet the classic definition of death because his soul had work to do. His soul lived on.
That's right.
Yeah.
That soul is alive today.
Absolutely. It's the unique character and consciousness of Yosha, of Yahweh and manifest in human form. This idea that God died on a pagan cross is wholly inconsistent not only with Yahweh's testimony but with the very nature of God.
Well, yeah, it's inconsistent with his testimony, but it's very consistent with the counterfeits.
Yes, it sure is.
That HaSatan brought forward in all kinds of writings that, by the way, never have any prophecy in them. You know, they're just nonsense is what they are.
But, of course, this whole thing that Paul promoted, which was that God died for your sins, is just absolutely ludicrous. God can't die, and death wouldn't resolve anybody's sins, and who would ever trust a God that man can kill?
They could die.
So Yosha goes and fulfills Pesach, and then Matzah. Matzah is the ultimately important day. And then what happens on Bukurim, which means, by the way, first fruits or firstborn children?
Well, for the fulfillment of Bukurim was when his soul found the light and the satisfaction, and then the set-apart spirit came back up and met with him, and that's firstborn male fruits, which is what Bukurim means.
If you were to associate a singular concept with the set-apart spirit, wouldn't it be light?
Yes, it would have to be. Sure.
Right. So when Yahweh on four of the seven Moed Mikre asks us to walk into the feminine manifestation of his light. Do you, you see a correlation there with
the soul? Talking about putting on the clothing, and hallelujah,
yeah.
Which is, you know, radiate Yahweh's light. You're doing
exactly.
that by putting on the ruach. I mean,
right.
that's what happened to Adam and Chawa. That's why they were naked in the garden, is that the set-apart spirit of Yahweh left them, and that shiny coat that had always cloaked them, they were now naked.
Right. Yep. So now with the light through the set-apart spirit coming back on the soul of Yahusha, he is now once again a human manifestation, although he's unique among all humans at this point. But he's certainly a physical manifestation of Yahweh, although this time he's not just a physical manifestation. He can instantly disappear in one place and appear in another and walk through walls, correct?
That's right. He does, and he transports himself, teleports himself. You know, human bodies can't do that.
Right.
You know?
Right. And if God's idea was that he was going to take on physical form again, what would be the benefit of him taking on physical form? I can only think of one benefit of him taking on physical form, because the whole purpose of this was to be perfected and to be unified with Yahweh for all time.
What benefit could it have served showing what? I mean, he would have been kind of, you could say, well, the benefit would be that they could see that this mangled body was the same one they saw.
Right,
the
that's
tomb.
Right. So if there had been a physical resurrection, the only purpose of a physical resurrection would be to demonstrate to those who did not know him that the Romans were incapable of actually killing him, right?
Yeah, but then there would have been a problem with that. And the problem with that is that would have solidified some of Ha-Satan's counterfeits.
And it would have also spoken to those that did not know him. I mean,
yeah.
For example, if they did not know his nature, who he really was, then there would be no way with a body that didn't resemble the old one for anyone who did not know him to say, wow, this is someone that can beat death. That it's only those who knew him that could benefit if he had a different body. If he had the same body, anybody could have that saw him could have said, yeah, that's the guy that they beat the pulp out of, and he's alive now, so he's got to be divine. I think I'll put I'll believe him. But that's not the purpose of Pesach, Matzah, and Makorim. He wasn't trying to impress the Romans. He wasn't trying to convince anyone that didn't know him. And the only way you can benefit from Pesach, Matzah, and Makorim is to know him. And so if he had just appeared in his old body, then he would have impressed those who did not know him, as opposed to those who did know him. And so he didn't appear in his old body, which means that he had no intent whatsoever to impress those who didn't know him.
That's a good point. I never really thought of that. Yeah, he didn't. He doesn't really... One thing about Yahweh, you know, you talk about how he's not showy. I mean, he can stand up there in the clouds and say, listen to me, I command you this, and on and on. He doesn't do that because he's interested in people who really have come to realize there's something incredibly wrong with all the religious notions we've been taught. And, of course, you know, there clearly is. And so then you go on this search. Well, what's right? I mean, only a fool would believe there's no God, okay? I mean, we didn't pop out of thin air. That's just not science. That's not how things work.
Correct.
And so then you have to go on this search. And after you go on this search, you begin finding all these things, and all it does is solidifies the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And you begin asking yourself how you were ever fooled by the counterfeit.
Correct.
And most people weren't. I don't don't believe, I think when I told you I was a Christian, you said, well, you were an agnostic. And that's right. I mean, I was an agnostic because you can't really truly have faith in something that can't be understood
right.
or that makes no sense at all, mm-hmm. you know. And that's where you're at when you're stuck in the religious notion of Christianity. I mean, it's just a combination of Babylonian products and Greek Dionysus products and all this. I mean, Paul literally puts the most famous words from Dionysus in the mouth of Yahusha and his supposed conversion experience. And by the way, you can't convert to the truth.
Right.
There's nothing to convert to.
Correct.
You either accept the truth or you don't. There's no shades of gray in there. See, that's what we're taught on everything. Everything has a shade of gray. But there's only Barith and Azab. There's nothing in between.
Right. Covenant or separation. So the very fact that all four depictions of Yahusha post-Bukkudim, where his soul and Yahweh's spirit are unified, the fact that in all four cases, no one recognized him, it makes it impossible that he came back in his original body, that there was a bodily resurrection. Zero possibility. And one of the things that's really interesting is that in the two of those times, he's appearing to his disciples. And the first time, of course, he walks through the wall, which means he's not appearing in his physical body. And then he manifests a physical characteristic just to show, hey, if I manifest holes in my wrists, then, you know, what about that? Will that turn on a light in your brain there, Thomas? But when he revisited his disciples, he was they were out having a breakfast meeting beside a lake, and they didn't even recognize him the second time. Not even the second time did they recognize who he was. He had to reintroduce himself because his physical body was not resurrected. It would be counterproductive. He was trying to explain to us the purpose of Bukkudim, firstborn children, following Pesach and Matzah. We'll be back. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. So, Larry, after Yahusha fulfilled Pesach in year 4000 Yah on Pesach as the sacrificial lamb, after he fulfilled Matzah, the soul going to Sheol exonerate us, paying the price to ransom us on Matzah in year 4000 Yah, the following day. And after he is reunited with Yahweh as the firstborn of the firstborn children on Bukkudim, were there any more Moed Mikre that were fulfilled in year 4000 Yah?
49, seven sevens later, 49 days later, the Ruach actually enriched and empowered. They it descended upon the people who followed the way on Shabuah.
Yep. Now, there is a dress rehearsal for both Bukkudim and Shabuah. They take place at the same time we have the dress rehearsal for Pesach and Matzah. On Bukkudim, what we have is after the children of Israel have benefited from Pesach and Matzah, they're now going across the Sinai Peninsula, headed towards Mount Horeb, which is in Arabia. And at that point, they're being led by their Heavenly Father. They are now the children of Israel. And so we have the children of Israel, as Bukkudim means, firstborn children, with their father, camping out together and moving towards Yahweh's home. And then there's something that actually takes place, 7 Shabbat, into their journey as they gather at the base of Mount Horeb. That's the dress rehearsal for the purpose.
They're given the Torah. The Torah is
given the Torah. That's when they're given the Torah. Exactly. Which tells us that Shabuah, where we are enriched with Yahweh's teaching and empowered by His Spirit, that the purpose of Shavuot is actually explained during the Exodus, where that's when the Torah is, the teaching is revealed to the children of Yisrael. So we have a dress rehearsal for it. So as we move down to the last three Moed Mikre, we don't yet have a fulfillment of them. They are yet to be fulfilled. So the first four in year 4000 Yah were fulfilled. The last three have not yet. Do you think that there might have been a dress rehearsal, a insight into Sukkah, which is to camp out with God, that might have helped explain?
Well, Yao Kanan even says he sukkahed with us, which means he was probably born on Sukkah, the body, and then the...
Exactly. Yeah. So for God to camp out with humankind, don't you think that Yah was going to appear and begin to camp out with mankind on his sixth and most important of his visits? Don't you think he's going to fulfill the symbolism of Sukkah?
Absolutely.
Not only does Yao Kanan tell us that he tabernacled with us, Sukkah means to tabernacle or to camp out. When you have Miriam and Yosef headed to Jerusalem, why do you think they're headed to Jerusalem in the first place? Isn't the whole instruction on the instruction for Sukkah is that if you're in the land, you come to the heart of the land to pitch your tent and camp out with Yahweh.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
sure.
So
yeah.
Every member of the covenant, the children of Israel, came to Jerusalem and camped out in their tents for the 8 days of Sukkah each year. That's why they were headed to Jerusalem. Now, you know, you read Luke and you have a tax, but irrelevant. What's relevant is they were headed to Jerusalem because it was the celebration of Sukkah. It's the one time a year that everybody that's in Yisrael shows up to camp out with Yahweh.
I do want to ask you something. Yeah. I was thinking about this. What do you think? Mm-hmm. That might have been, the foreshadowing of Teruah. I mean, I can see Lot in that. Mm.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, Yosha explains that Lot is the foreshadowing of Teruah. He actually explains that Lot's removal from the festering cesspool of Sodom is a dress rehearsal for Teruah. Yeah, it's one of those we don't even need to guess because he told us that yes, indeed.
Yeah, well,
Lot was one of his children. What's important too is that even Lot's children, so the children of the covenant's children, were brought out of that cesspool as well, just as we'll be removed from human institutions on that day. Speaking about Yahweh's calendar, the things that occur, what they mean, that ultimately there are six steps that lead to God, and the seventh is Sukkah, camping out with God. And that was the time that the child was born and the son was given, would have been on Sukkah. God always is consistent and reinforces his testimony. But while we've gone through this presentation, Larry, I would have to ask you, is even if you understood everything that Yosha said and did, how important is Yosha to our salvation? Should we be praying to him? Should we be worshiping him? Should we be focusing on him?
No, he specifically tells us not to focus on his physical manifestation, but rather upon his entire spiritual endeavors, and he will not adjudicate from that point either. He says that very clearly. Should we recognize it? Oh, you betcha. But should we focus on it? No. And the reason that he specifically tells us not to focus on it is pretty clear to me. It's because he knew that these imitations were, going to come around.
Right.
That's exactly these counterfeits.
one of the reasons that that he doesn't make a big deal out of his name in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. I mean, he states it 220 times. I mean, that's a significant number of times that his name will be Yahusha. That the Yahusha ben Nun went up Mount Horeb and with Moshe to receive the Torah. Has the same name that that Yahweh chose, but realistically, even that name, should you have it right that you know his name is Yahusha, not Jesus, that really isn't so much a name as it is a identity designation and job description. So
right,
it's Yahweh saving us. I mean, I'm interested in what Yahusha did only in the sense that it is Yahweh that's saving us. So I look right through the physical manifestation to see the basis of that manifestation, which is Yahweh.
Yeah, that's the whole point of it, and that's what he asked us to do. And then at this point, we have to ask ourselves, if that was always God's plan, if that was always Yahweh's plan, and and the name is even Yahweh Saves, Yahusha.
Right.
Yes. And he talks about how he's going to act on all these moed.
Mm-hmm.
Why suddenly would he just change and lie? Why would he lie? Why would he just say, well, I'm a liar. This is all going to be changed, and it turns out that I'm very pro-religion instead of anti-religion, and I want you to start a religion, and everything I ever told you was a lie.
Right. I mean, didn't he speak of the Father's role and the Father's gift and the Father's Torah and the Sermon on the Mount?
Yeah, I think, you know, when somebody came up and they asked Yahusha, what do we do? What do we do to enter the covenant? What do we do to find this eternal life? He said, why are you asking me?
Right.
You know, the Father told you what to do.
Right, exactly.
And he even goes on to say he's just a diminished manifestation of the Father. He doesn't say it like that. He says, me and the Father are one. He's greater in elevation and size than I am. So their statement is exactly identical. It's the same statement. Nothing changed.
Correct. Yeah. To create a religion on a misnomed individual that is depicted in the same caricature as Dionysus is just unbelievably ludicrous.
It's also acts as such a leech. It actually, Yahweh even talks about the people in the last generation being leeches. It's so funny. But it acts as a leech because the only single thing that you can really tie to Christianity is Yahweh saying, talking about how he's going to bear the strokes due the family.
Right.
He doesn't say, that blood on that pole saves you, does he?
No.
He says,
never.
I just took... But they leech like sort of one tenth of a percent of the story and then just run off on a runaway religion. And how do they do it? Well, they put it all in a book named after the sun god. It's Biblia. And they just highly copy edit all the witness writings and focus primarily on Paul, who was a fraud. That was it. That's all that happened here.
Yeah. Elements of the truth, tiny little slivers of the truth mixed in with the horrible lies and the tiny slivers of truth. Yeah, simply give the lies.
On sand that they're always talking. They built the foundation on sand, you know, because it's built on men's words.
Yeah, Larry, I'm going to have to put you on hold just a second because our switchboard's not working. We have Tommy calling in from North Carolina. Hello, Tommy. I understand you have a question or comment about our presentation of Yahweh's most important days so that those who are listening would reject Christmas and Easter.
Yeah, my comment was towards Christmas, and I was actually, before I called into the show today, I was talking to my daughter, and I was like, I got to get the shows on, you know.
Yeah, great.
But I was explaining to her about, you know, as you're walking away from Christmas and you got these people in your family that are telling you you're depriving your kids of something good, and on the surface, it can look like that. But really, what you're really doing when you're observing Christmas is it's the carrot and stick approach. It's you're teaching your kid to do the right thing for the wrong reason. And the deeper you look at it, the more weird it gets. It's you know, as you graduate from Santa Claus,
right?
You become a grown up now instead of gifts to make you do good, and Santa Claus watching you, you've got this heaven and hell paradigm. It's like, well, you know, you don't believe the Santa Claus gig anymore. So now, how do we civilize these grown ups? We have to get them to be good somehow.
Yeah, I don't think there's any part of Christmas that's good. And you know, the idea of giving gifts, man. The idea of giving gifts, of course, dates back to the Roman religion. But the only gift that's important relative to Yahweh is His gift of the Torah, of its covenant, and of His invitations to meet with Him. That's the gift that is valuable. That's the gift that Yosha was speaking of. God's gift to us is meritorious. Our gifts to one another is meaningless. There's no part of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms that tells us that we should exchange gifts between us. So even that is absurd. And every aspect of Christmas kills everyone that participates. So if you encourage your children to participate in Christmas, you're killing them.
Yes.
You're misleading them and you're killing them. Why would you do that?
Just on the surface, it's not a real relationship. If your kid loves you because you bought him a nice gift, I mean, where's the free will in that?
Correct.
Right? You know, like you said in the Torah, it's Yahweh is the richest being in existence. But he doesn't want us to come to him on that basis. He wants us to know him as an individual.
I would ask you this question, Tommy. When Yahweh gave us the gift of the Torah, which presents the covenant and His invitations to meet with Him, did He wrap His gift up? Did He conceal His gift in wrapping paper so that you wouldn't even know it's there?
He wrote a very long testimony explaining very detailed.
No, and it's open for all of us to read. No gift wrap, no tying it with a bow, providing a hidden wrap over it as to conceal what's inside for that specific day. No, it's exactly the opposite of what Yahweh does. So now there's no aspect of Christmas that is beneficial. It is rotten to the core. You know what I was began the program and I shared. You know what would that's how we learn. I've been talking ever since. What would Christ want for Christmas? And this is what the Christian answer was: more forgiveness. Now, why would you? How would you have more forgiveness? I mean, you're either forgiven or you're not forgiven. There can't be a concept of more forgiveness, and us forgiving one another is meaningless. What's important is Yahweh forgiving us.
You know, where Paul's sin abounds, and you know, grace much more abounds, so they need more forgiveness because they're just deprived. Their minds are deprived, and it's insane.
Yeah, one of them says more tolerance. Why don't you tell me a place where Yahweh or Yosha is tolerant? I mean, they have no tolerance, much less wanting more tolerance. That's how deceived Christians are. More tolerance is what he want? No.
There's no gray areas.
Yeah, he was about no tolerance and then more giving of ourselves. Giving of ourselves to what? For what? What's the purpose? I mean, The whole thing is just so absurd, it makes you sick.
When I was explaining, what it does to the relationship, you know, buying gifts to win a relationship, it reminded me of a movie. This movie had an author who was, he was having a hard time finding a good relationship with the girl of his dreams. You know, it's not a shallow relationship, but a really good girl. And so he was an author. That was his job. And he started writing about the girl he was dreaming about. And because these dreams were so lucid, he could remember really good detail. Mm-hmm. And as he wrote, of course, a fictional movie, she became real in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And So what happened is later on, you know, to prove to his best friend that this girl was the girl in his book, his novel he was writing, he started changing her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so originally when he first started writing the book, they were actually in love.
Mm-hmm.
And then the movie progresses on, and later on she's about to leave him, and so he changes her even more.
Yeah. Well.
And then at the end of the movie, he realizes that the girl, he loved her so much as she was, that she was worth losing. He would rather let her walk away than change who she was because he liked her that much. He'd rather have her as a friend. And it just kind of reminded me of what y'all would want from us. You know, free will. It's very important to have free will, because if you don't have it, the love can't exist. True relationships do not exist without free will. And Christmas is just a control mechanism.
That is exactly right. Tommy, you are correct that the reality is that their own free will, Christmas, are precluding their souls and those they invite to participate with them from ever knowing God or for spending any time with Him in heaven. It is a death blow to your family. Don't do them. It is the ultimate negative gift. Welcome back to Shattery Mist. We have Jaime, who's called in many times previously from Colombia. Hello, Jaime. How are you?
Hey, Tony. Great job. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we don't have a very good connection.
Okay, well, I'll do my best. Well, I tell you, I'm looking forward to tomorrow, that everything's close and all that, because today I got all of your teachings, for all of 2014, I downloaded from Bless Yah site, Richard's site,
great.
I think it is.
Yeah, blessyahwa.com.
Yeah, it's really great because it's commercial free. Richard, I know it takes time. It's a lot of work he puts into it, but he cuts off all the commercials. So it's commercial free listening, and I just listen to the teachings all day long. Okay.
Well, thank you. It's you know, we do our best to try to share what Yahweh has shared with us, and it is a far better way to spend tomorrow than doing anything that is associated with Christmas. And obviously, we're going to be live here tomorrow. Scott, and the producer of the program, and I will be here live. I mean, we have such a bad connection that I'm going to have to put you on hold here. We've got in a few minutes left Osriel calling in from Denver. How are you today?
I am great. I'm so thankful that you guys were on these 2 days here. I'd like to thank Scott and Richard with his Bless Yahweh site, and Larry and Yada. You guys have just been the only sunshine, really, in my life since I've turned 40, but it has been the brightest year of my life so far. And I just wanted to thank you guys for all the work that you put in. And
well, you know, we're weird, as Larry would say. We're not deserving of any thanks. We're delighted to be part of Yahweh's family. We're delighted to share with what He shared with us. And what we find is that when you share what His testimony, it not only benefits those who listen to Him, but it is something that is extraordinarily enjoyable for those of us who are doing the sharing. Larry, do you ever find that a sense that what you're doing is work, or that you're making a sacrifice?
No, I find it a lot of fun. I really do. I enjoy it. I'm excited about sharing the truth to people, and I'm really excited when people like this actually take us up on it and look at take Yahweh up on his words, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, exactly. And in that regard, Osriel, that the one who, you know, really has earned appreciation is you. You decided that you would bow your back against societal norms, that you'd walk away from religion and politics and patriotism and all the things that most people lap up as if they were drinking candy, and instead choose to come to know Yahweh. You'd invest the time to know God as He really is, and invest the time to learn what He's offering, and then capitalize on it. it's you who are bringing a smile to the Creator's face. And he did all this just to have you be part of his family.
It was really eye-opening when I learned that there were no tenses in God's, in Yah's vernacular.
Yeah, yeah.
It really made a lot of sense for my Christian upbringing, and never really been able to swallow that bitter pill, that pill that just did not seem right in my heart ever my entire life.
Yeah.
And right now in my life, I am kind of in this period where I am being very, not savaged, but it's very hard to, not hard at all, it's just very eye-opening to see how uncharacteristic of the family members that have fully been indoctrinated in the whole Christian realm. And but it's been very
this is a tough time of year, only because of one thing. When you realize how many people are lost, you know, somebody sends you an email that says, you know, here Christians are wanting, what would Christ want for Christmas? Or somebody else, a religious zealot, saying we need to put Christ back in Christmas. And there's so many reminders of the beguiling and hideous nature of religion at a time like this, that it's sad what we have done to ourselves.
Yes. There's no shame in it, because being no tense in his vernacular, I turned 40 on the day that I realized that someone was finally telling me something that was my heart was agreeing with. And I want to thank you for that, guys. I know it's not you, but I haven't...
It's our pleasure, because Yahweh told us, and we're simply sharing it. And Larry, I know you and I have reveled in this. One of my greatest joys was learning that there are no tenses in Hebrew, which means that the Torah is not stuck in time. It's eternal.